Talktainment Radio, worldwide sound. Talktainmentradio.com. We give you a reason to come. The world's greatest radio. We give you a reason to stay.
Radio, the way it should be heard.
You got the power.
The views and opinions expressed are those of the host and guest and not necessarily those of TalktainmentRadio.com, the management, the staff, or K&E World Network, LLC.
This is The Compensatory Concept with Mr. Neely Fuller, heard exclusively on TalktainmentRadio.com, the world's greatest radio. Radio, the way it should be heard. And now, Mr. Neely Fuller.
If you do not understand white supremacy, which is racism, what it is and how it works, everything else that you understand will only confuse you. Only confuse you. Only confuse you.
Go ahead. Make my day.
This is The Compensatory Concept with Mr. Neely Fuller Jr., heard exclusively on TalktainmentRadio.com. Radio, the way it should be heard, the world's greatest radio. And joining us live from Washington, D.C., every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. So if you're on Central Standard Time, it would be 11 o'clock. If you're on Pacific Standard Time, it would be 7 o'clock a.m. So I think I got it all right. Anyway, I'm here with Mr. Neely Fuller. But joining me for this session is Sister Earth Jallo. Good morning, Sister Jallo.
Oh, good day, Brother Kahari. How are you?
How art thou?
I am just beautiful. How is Mr. Fuller there?
Well, Mr. Fuller is here. Mr. Fuller, how are you, sir?
I'm still learning.
Awesome business.
As you know, Mr. Fuller from time to time joins us on another show, another radio station that we do a Saturday morning show on. So, and Earth, you're in the studio with him. You're in the studio when we do it many times. So it is good to have you to sit in with us on this session. Mr. Fuller, tell us how we can get your works.
You can get the basic book and the additional word guide, which is an addition to the basic book, by going to producejustice.com. But I'd like to announce right now that the basic book is temporarily unavailable and will be available on May the 1st. On May the 1st, you can get the basic book, but you can get the information now by going to producejustice.com. And that will be the textbook workbook for thought, speech, and our action for victims of white supremacy.
Well, congratulations. It sounds like you sold out of the book, so that's a good thing, Mr. Fuller.
Well, it's from that perspective, yes, but the book should be available, so that's a temporary glitch,
right?
It'll be about a couple of weeks, a little more maybe, around May the 1st for sure.
Well,
than May the 1st.
That's a glitch we'd all like to have, isn't that right, Irv?
Absolutely.
You're a book person. You have pushed books for years. And she was one of the ones that worked on making my book, Race, Cold War, a bestseller, which I thank you for. Irv, we have looked, and Mr. Fuller, we have looked now. Something just came out the other day regarding Reverend Al Sharpton. I don't know, Mr. Fuller, if you're aware of it. There was a piece, so I wanted to get Earth's thoughts on it, but there were a number of things that kicked out regarding Reverend Sharpton and his FBI. They found out that he was an FBI informant for years, and he had been used to gather information from the Genovese crime family. Allegedly, according to FBI data, he was... the reason why he became an informant is because apparently he was involved in trying to do be a broker for I guess it was a kilo, either cocaine, it was drugs, trying to move some kilos.
Cocaine.
Yeah, was it cocaine? Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was cocaine. So they flipped him, and he had become an informant, and he had been around people like James Brown, Michael Jackson. He was a go-between in the Genovese crime. I mean, it's just... And then it raises the question, about ever since the we observed 46 years, the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King earlier this week. And we've been thinking, what kind of people are being put before us ever since Malcolm and Dr. King, men who obviously truly believed in what they stood for and that they were willing to put their life on the line. No one can be more truer than that they would stand against all odds and stand there and put their life on the line for what they believed in. But now we're seeing a kind of new breed, if you will. I don't know whether these, I don't want to use the word leaders, but these people who are being put in front of us almost earth as influence peddlers almost. And then they're being moved up the scale. And we realize now how they're being moved up the scale. They're being allowed, they're being put in these positions. And we see it at the local level. We see it at the national level. And they're not speaking about our issues. And even if they are, it appears that a lot of them are double dealing, backdooring, and they're acting as informants, passing out information and stuff like that. Irv, let me get your thoughts on, then I'm going to go to Mr. Fuller. Then we have a caller who has joined us also.
Go ahead, wonderful. Irv. You know, it's just funny to me, and it makes sense now, you know, how he got out front and saying that he speaks for all of, you know, black people, when in actuality, he really didn't speak for black people. You know, he hasn't done anything to really liberate or help our forward motion. You know, he was out front on Agenda 6. He was out front, you know, on the Trayvon Martin. And it just makes me wonder, you know, what else he was paid to do, and was he a paid, you know, informant? You know, it just, it runs deep
for me.
Well,
it's not only him. You look at what's happening in Charlotte, North Carolina. The mayor down there just forced to resign. I mean, and you look at Detroit, what happened up there?
Right.
I mean, so, I mean, and it's, I mean, there's many, many more. Alistair Hastings. The
mysterious deaths of, you know, Brown and the other Congress system.
It just goes on.
It goes
on
and
on
and on and on. And then, you know, if Sharpton has been around all of these people, big time entertainers, you know, big time politicians,
right,
and saying that he's out front, you know, speaking for the whole of black people, I'm wondering what kind of detriment him and others have done to us.
Well, I don't know if it's them, but whatever it was, he apparently got caught up into something.
Mm.
And probably wasn't mature enough to understand all the ramifications, probably was led by down the road. And I've said that if you look at all the black entertainers who have been quietly led to strange places, it just raises some questions as to what's going on. And I think Mr. Fuller talked about white supremacy in the area of entertainment. So that's what we're going to kind of focus on. Yes, Irv, you're going to say something else.
You know, it makes me wonder, you know, do you have to sell out in order to, you know, be out front, to have that so-called leadership role? And it makes me wonder, you know, about the rest of our so-called, you know, out front leaders.
You're wondering if people are placed in positions.
Absolutely.
Mr. Fuller, let me get your thoughts. You don't necessarily have to speak on the Sharpton thing, because I don't, you know, but this whole notion of placing people in front of us, there's a science to that, Mr. Fuller. Let's kind of get into how people in the entertainment industry, politics, whatever, it appears that people are placed in front of us. A lot of us don't really ask questions or do enough research about who's being placed in front of us and who's being asked to influence us. Mr. Fuller.
Well, according to what I have written and what I've been consistently saying for years, what I call the code, which is just a way of going about doing things in the best manner, presumably doing things in the best manner, I'm required to make comments about what you're talking about and things similar to this, just to simply say that when a black person speaks on anything, you just say, well, he or she said what he or she said. But then you never look at any black person, period, as being a leader of black people in a system of white supremacy. We're in a system of white supremacy. That automatically means that all of the leaders of black people everywhere on the planet are white. There's no such thing as a black leader in the system of white supremacy. So if you don't have black leaders, what do you have? You have black spokespersons. What is a black spokesperson? A black spokesperson is a person that speaks. I'm a black spokesperson. Why? Because I'm speaking. Speaking about what? Speaking about anything. Anytime a black person speaks, they're speaking about something. I'm talking about any black person walking down the street. They're speaking about something. That's a black spokesperson. But the black spokesperson is only speaking for him or herself. Now, if he's carrying a message, he or she is carrying a message for somebody else, then he or she can just say, well, I'm bringing you this message from somebody else. But as far as speaking on behalf or against all other black people, that doesn't mean anything because the white supremacists are going to determine what's going to happen anyway. That's what the system of white supremacy means. You don't have any black people that have power.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first thing. In order to be a leader, you have to have power. And the first power you have to be able to protect your followers. You have to be able to feed, clothe, and house your followers if you are a black leader. So no black person is qualified to do that anywhere on the planet. All of the people who are so-called presidents of countries and whatnot in Africa and all like that, they don't have any power. They get their power from the white supremacists. That's what white supremacy means. Those words are loaded. White supremacy, racism. Racism is white supremacy. White supremacy is racism. It's the most powerful government on the planet, which means all other governments are really nullified. They come under the system of white supremacy if you're a non-white person. You come under the system of white supremacy. You come under no other system on this planet because there isn't any other system for you if you're classified as non-white. You come under the system of white supremacy, and it doesn't make any difference what your title is or what your position of the day is. You come under the system, and you will be beholden to what the white supremacists want. Regards to who you are, you're not outside of that system. And when they give their dictates, when they send you out to do things, I mean, they say you're going to have a job here, you're going to have housing here, you're going to be down by the riverside, this is where we're going to build some houses for you, we're going to give you a Soweto, I mean, a shanty town or whatnot. That's it. When they speak, that's it. And if you say, well, I don't believe you're doing the correct thing. I don't go along with that. I'm a black leader, and I don't think that's the way for you to go. Well, you don't think what? You have to have a house. You have to have a family. You have to have an income. You have to have money. Where do you think it's going to come from, boy? Where do you think it's going to come from? It's going to come from me. So how can you consider yourself to be a leader? And you're dependent on me. You say, well, I have my own church and all like that. And so, I'm the leader of my congregation. No, you're not the leader of anything. Because your congregation is beholden to me, not to you. Because you are beholden to me. And I can cut off you anytime I get ready by cutting off your congregation from you. Because I pay them on these jobs. You don't. That's why you're able to get a collection in the plate. Now, don't get tested with me. That's the voice of the white supremacists. That's what supreme means. Supreme.
Mr. Fuller, I was just about to ask you because of, I like to play with words and when I hear you say white supremacy, it's almost like I keep hearing, they're better than me. They're better than me. They're supreme. They're the ultimate. And that's just not the way I picture them in my mind.
Oh, you're correct in that.
I mean,
they are only supreme over non-white people.
Okay.
See, the white supremacists themselves, I think it was a white man some years ago from Alabama, I read this. He said, well, if people really want to understand what's going on, he said, this is the way it is. He said, God made the white man to serve God.
Mm.
Now listen to the words.
Okay.
God made the white man to serve God and made the Negro to serve the white man. And if everybody just shut up and go about their business of carrying out that mission, everything will be just fine for everybody.
Okay.
Now that is the picture. That is the white supremacy. The white supremacists never said that they were superior to God. They just say that they have access to God and that these Negroes don't, because your voice isn't even heard. I mean, you know, God works through the white people. And then the white people tell the black people what to do. That's what he's saying. And that is the philosophy of many, many white supremacists.
Wow.
They say that they are not supreme to God. God is supreme over everything. But they say when God gets ready to speak to the people of this planet, he speaks through white people. And that black people don't have any access. Black people just have access to white people. But when they try to go around white people and talk to God, God don't pay any more attention. Because that's not the hierarchy. It's a setup here. Now,
well, that
the
makes
question is whether or not...
Mr. Fuller, that makes a little bit more sense, because when I hear the Christians talking and they say that you have to go through Jesus to get to God, so that kind of like makes me think, okay, so the white folks must be Jesus, because you can't get to God but through the Son, they say. So I'm putting this in a whole nother perspective.
Yes, that's always been the perspective of the white supremacists. The white supremacists are the people who build churches. I mean, you know,
Man. So
they have no problem, but they usually don't like black people to be sitting beside them in the church, because they say, well, you know, you're just kind of a nuisance. Well, you know, we may let you sit beside us in some churches and all like that. I mean, you know, but it's best that you just go down by the riverside and have your own churches and, you know, you pray and all like that. If you want to have fun doing that, go and have fun. But you will be beholden to me, because that's the way it's set up. You will answer to me. And regardless of what you say God told you last night, you will answer to me, because I got direct access to God. You don't have nothing, because you are a Negro. You have been nullified.
Okay.
You come under me. That's the picture.
Let's open up the lines. We've got another caller waiting to speak to Mr. Fuller. Caller, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Go ahead. You're on the air. Where are you calling from?
Oh, I'm calling from New York City.
Oh, wonderful. Go ahead.
Yes. Just really quickly on what you're talking about with the so-called black leaders, if you could see just Malcolm X, MLK, very prime examples. Like you said, they were able to stand against the odds. They were killed for it. And I don't like to talk with other people about the suspicious deaths and whatnot, because I just feel like I lose them. So I want to get straight to the facts. And I had a question for Mr. Fuller. Speaking about the deaths, very recently, Chakwe Lumumba, the very recent mayor of
Jackson, Mississippi.
Yes, out of Mississippi. Mm-hmm. Yes, he was also recently had a mysterious death. And what he spoke about, and what I'm really interested in picking Mr. Fuller's brain about is reparations. I understand, and I'm done with the whole talking to white people about it. Like you said, Mr. Fuller, there's nothing non-white people can tell white people. We amongst ourselves have to get it together in all areas of major people activity, economics, education, entertainment, labor law, politics, religion, sex, war. I just wanted to know, in your thought of us collectively getting ourselves together and using the code to build a better world for each man and woman, universal man and woman, do you feel that black and non-white people, especially specifically black people in America, some people can refer to them as new Africans, whatever you want to call them, do you think that we are owed anything in machinery, technology, labor, money, land, in order to build a new community, at least for non-white people, because of all of the things that were stolen from us and the way we were treated for the past 400 years?
Very good question.
Do you think reparations come in any way into the formula at any time, Mr. Fuller?
Mr. Fuller.
No, the title of my book is The United Independent Compensatory Code System Concept. We're entitled, some people call it reparations, which means repairing what was damaged. But I say, I prefer to use the word compensation, meaning making up for what's missing, which is a kind of slightly different perspective. Making up for what's missing. What is missing? What's missing are three things you have to have, and that's truth, justice, and correctness in order to get peace, because that should be the ultimate goal. So truth is that which is. You reveal whatever the truth is. You got to have that, because the races deal in falsehood. And so then you can produce something called justice, and there is no legal definition for the word justice, so I made a compensatory definition some years ago, and it's called, it goes like this. It's just two parts: guaranteeing that no person is mistreated, and guaranteeing that the person that needs help the most gets the most constructive help. And then correctness, of course, means balance between yourself and people and all other things, the things that are around you, the entire environment. You have to be in tune with your environment. I mean, eating the correct food and all like that. But in direct answer to your question about, do the white supremacists owe black people? The answer is yes. But they owe everything because they took everything. And the one thing we don't want is cash money.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I completely agree with that. That's where a lot of non-white people get confused. When you talk about, that's why I love your book. You laid out very concretely what needs to be done in each area of activity. And when we talk about cash money, all in the, at least the mindset that black people have today, they're just going to spend it on things that have no, that won't give them any wealth. They'll be rich for a little while, but what we need is wealth. That's why I said technology, land, things that can help us sustain ourselves for a while. And when you say cash money, I completely agree, Mr. Fuller. So what do you think that we are owed specifically in the, in, I don't say near future, but in order to get us on the road to at least material things, food, shelter, the things that human beings need and deserve?
Well, it's, we go directly to the jugular, I mean, meaning the center of where the problem is. You have to get rid of the system of white supremacy and have a system of justice. That's it. That's the compensation. You have to get rid of the entire system. See, we can't build anything entire within a system of white supremacy.
Yes, sir.
I mean, that's a contradiction. You have a system of racism in place. You need a system of justice, meaning you have to guarantee that no person is mistreated. It's really simple. I mean, just go outside of that envelope that they have put us in, saying that, okay, within the system of white supremacy, we can make some adjustments and that we can give you black people a little more than we have been giving you. That's not getting to the root cause of the problem. You have to actually get rid of the entire system in every area of activity: economics, education, entertainment, labor, law, politics, religion, sex, and war. That entire system has to be completely done away with. It's the only system on the planet where non-white people are concerned. So that's the system you get rid of, and that's what you call it. Don't call it by the American system or the capitalist system or the socialist system or the communist system. No, these are words that get in the way. It's called a system of white supremacy. You get rid of it and replace it with what? In a compensatory fashion. You replace it with what? You replace it with a system of justice. And justice means starting with this right this minute. It's not a long, drawn-out program. You just say, we're going to guarantee that nobody's mistreated, starting with today. No person, nowhere on the planet, is going to be mistreated. We're not going to tolerate it. And the person that needs help the most is going to get the most constructive help. Now, with that type of philosophy, let's start right now in every little town, every little village, every little tribal arrangement, every city. Just guarantee that nobody's going to be mistreated. We're just not going to tolerate it, white or non-white. That's it. You know, that will be the repair work, the reparations. That will be the compensation.
Okay.
Mr. Fuller, I just had one last very quick thing to ask you very fast. As much as you're saying it's simple, and I completely agree, what you're saying is very accessible, very simple. However, you must agree that it is very esoteric information, meaning not too many people understand your philosophy, Mr. Fuller, and I consider you the greatest black thinker that I've ever heard of. But I just want to get your opinion on, how do you feel about other writers such as Dr. Cress Welsing, J.A. Rogers has written about it. Kenneth Clark has written about racism. And what they've said in very, very many instances is that it is impossible. There is something psychologically very deep-rooted in the white mindset, in the white supremacist mindset, that they just cannot, well, you're familiar with Dr. Cress Welsing's work, they cannot be around people of color. It is just impossible. And what it will result in is injustice, Mr. Fuller. So do you really, and so how, my question is, how do you see this necessarily ending? Because this has been going on for quite some time. Is there a cutoff point where there is no turning back and white supremacy will completely and be here to stay forever? Or do you think that it will eventually end? Like, do you think that there's some cutoff date? How do you see this ending, Mr. Fuller?
All right. Appreciate that. Mr. Fuller.
I see it ending by the non-white people following a code of thought, speech, and action that is productive of a thing called justice. In other words, when we interact with each other, make sure that every interaction, every time one black person contacts another, make sure that the result has a constructive effect. It's just that simple. Before you pick up a cell phone or an iPad or whatever and contact anybody, or go to a meeting and contact anybody, you do that with in mind of when I come away from talking to this person, it's going to have a constructive effect. Now, this is very destructive of the system of racism. The formula is very simple. Now, how that will play out, that's up to the racist to make the call, because eventually the racist, the white supremacists, will have to make a decision whether or not they're going to produce justice or whether or not they're going to destroy all the non-white people on the planet. I mean, exterminate us. And we should push them to have to make that decision. And that's cold, but this is where it is. That should be the direction we could go, because there's no other direction to go. See, it's not like there's an option. Actually, everything that we are doing is leading up to that, where people, those white people, not all white people, just the white people who believe in white supremacy, and they are the smartest and most powerful, they're going to have to make a decision if black people keep making what you call constructive progress. And that decision will be whether you're going to kill all of these people who have color in their skin, or whether or not you're going to relinquish everything and let them practice justice.
Mr. Fuller.
All right, thank you. Everyone, stay right there. More to come. This is The Compensatory Concept with Mr. Neely Fuller Jr., heard exclusively on TalkTainmentRadio.com. I'm Brother Kahari. Stay right there.
TalkTainmentRadio.com is the premier internet radio platform offering 40-plus talk radio-style programs professionally produced, optimized for online distribution, featuring Columbus, Ohio on-air personalities. TalkTainmentRadio.com offers listeners diverse programming options covering topics such as arts and culture, love, life and relationships, technology, religion, paranormal activities, local and national politics, women's issues, alongside health and wellness. Listeners can access their favorite TalkTainmentRadio.com programs free of cost through the website. Download the TTR app to your cell phone and you can take us wherever you go. We have programs on demand to fit your schedule through our podcast. The address is TalkTainmentRadio.com.
Hi, this is Michelle from the E. Michelle Lee Show on TalkTainmentRadio.com. Join me and TTR May 18th, 2014, as I host the first annual Walk to Cure FM Ohio at Wolf Park in Columbus, Ohio. 1K Fun Walk, 5K Run. Brought to you by the National Fibromyalgia and Chronic Pain Association. A day of awareness filled with activities, education, inspiration, brunch awards ceremony, entertainment, and more. Special guest speakers, Tony Terry's wife, Ronnie Terry, a sufferer of fibromyalgia, and Jan Chambers, president of the NFMCPA. And me, E. Michelle Lee, your host. Join the event on Facebook, PR with a Purpose. Get the details, all about the walk, how to register, everything you need to know for Sunday, May 18, 2014, Wolf Park in Columbus, Ohio, at www.prwithapurpose.com.
Hey, Carol, that's your third espresso. What's going on?
I've just been to my doctor, and he's ordered lots of tests. Blood work, scans, x-rays.
Why? Is everything okay?
That's just it. I don't really know the whole story.
Well, I think the best thing you can do is get more involved in your own health care and get some information.
How do I do that?
One of the most important things you can do for your health is to ask questions. Be an active and informed member of your healthcare team. Remember, your healthcare is about you. For starters, you should ask what condition you're being tested for, how the tests will be done, how soon you'll get the results, and what happens after that. Learn more about what questions to ask about medical tests and other aspects of your healthcare. Get the brochure, Be Prepared for Medical Appointments, available at ahrq.gov/consumer. That's ahrq.gov/consumer. A message from the U.S. Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality.
The Ohio Sickle Cell and Health Association celebrates April Minority Health Month and invites you to learn more about sickle cell disease. If you or someone you know has sickle cell disease, we urge you to learn more and take the time to know your hemoglobin status. Contact the Ohio Sickle Cell and Health Association at 614-228-0157. That's 614-228-0157. We invite you to visit our website at ohiosicklecell.org. Together, we can face and fight sickle cell disease.
The United Independent Compensatory Code System concept by Neely Fuller is considered as one of the substantial and basic books for understanding and effectively countering racism. Neely Fuller
will turn upside down everything you've heard
and everything you think you know about racism and how it works. Call area code 202-484-5461. 202-484-5461.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
You got the power.
News I want to break down here today. We're going to get into very important information on the economic front, also with what's happening in the Middle East, as well as Ukraine, and some new information on good old Al Sharpton. The Smoking Gun is saying that he was really a informant against the mafia and against other groups for the FBI. I mean, Al Sharpton has always been a bloated, disgusting, pig-like, just wannabe tough guy, thug. I mean, the guy is a complete joke. He is a race pimp and just a complete fraud. And, again, I'm not demonizing somebody for being an informant against the mob. It's just so perfect that they're reporting this about him, because I'll guarantee you he was reporting on black people. I will guarantee you he wasn't allowed to pull the shenanigans he pulled and create the political diversions where he was acting like he was fighting the political establishment in New York without some serious backing.
This is the Compensatory Concept with Mr. Neely Fuller Jr., heard exclusively on TalkTainmentRadio.com. I'm Brother Kahari. Sitting in with us is Irv Jalloh. Of course, Mr. Fuller's here. Irv, let me go to you. Let me get your thoughts on what you just heard. That's Alex Jones from Prison Planet. Before I go, they have a piece I wanted to read also that came out from Smoking Gun. Now, this is all over the media. It says, in fact, by any measure, Sharpton himself was a mafia associate. The law enforcement designation given to mob affiliates who, while not initiated, work with and for crime family members. What is your thoughts on what Alex Jones said, Irv, and what I just read from Smoking Gun? I know you read the article. We all have read the article. We're all looking at this question of people who are put in front of us. Mr. Fuller calls them spokesperson. Other people call them influence peddlers. Depends on how you look at it. People who are put in front of us and people who are pushed and given and cradled and moved up the ladder and put in front of us as people that we ought to follow. how much information is being transferred, et cetera, et cetera. What's your thoughts, Irv Gallo?
You know, it's just funny to hear Alex Jones. You know, he could have been a little bit more diplomatic. I think he doesn't have the name call folks. I just that does something to me. You can say what you need to say without being derogatory and just, you know, like that.
Getting past that for the moment. The substance.
Yeah. So the substance of it all. He's right.
In what way? What way is he
because
right?
Al Sharpton is still out here sucking the life out of us, dividing us as a people. I mean, I don't see what he's done that's so great that he should be out here speaking for the whole of us, being a spokesperson for us, because I've never looked at Sharpton as a leader, you know, and a few others that he runs with.
Mr. Fuller says there is no leaders.
He says only white people.
I have to agree
with him. We always discuss, you know, having that seat, but not having any power for the seat. You know what I mean? To actually implement change for your people. And Sharpton is a joke. He's been a joke for years. I'm of the younger generation. He was a joke to me, so I can only imagine what he was like for the generations, you know, before me, you know, and the generations after me. Do they even know who Al Sharpton is?
Well, what it raises, there was something called COINTELPRO.
Ah.
And Mr. Fuller, I'm sure you're familiar with this whole notion of COINTELPRO that existed for years. We found out later about Ron Coringa, you know, and his alleged background as an informant. I mean, you know, it's just so deep. Until you wonder, all these people that are being put in front of you, who's who? What's their real background? And how do you deal with them? And I can understand the position that Mr. Fuller takes on a lot of this, because you almost have to take that position. Because as you learn more about what this thing is, the more you say, wait a minute. It looks like a whole lot of stuff is created and set up to be what it really isn't. And then that gets perpetuated and a whole lot of people get caught up in that net.
Yeah, because, you know, as my generation started looking sideways at Mr. Sharpton after the Tawana Brawley situation. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I mean, that whole situation was just ugly. And you know, there was no real substance, you know, for him, for us, you know, there wasn't. What have we got under the spokesmanship of Al Sharpton?
Yeah.
Jesse Jackson?
Yeah. In fact, the data on black people in the year 2014 is worse than ever. Yeah. Let me go to my caller. Caller, you're on the air with Mr. Fuller and Irv Gallo and myself. Go ahead, caller. Caller, go ahead. You're on the air.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Go ahead.
Good morning. I just had two brief questions for Mr. Fuller.
Uh-huh.
And my first question, well, I apologize if I do stray off topic, but he used a term in a previous interview that I was wondering if you could clarify, and that term was compensatory conversation control.
Okay. Mr. Fuller?
Compensatory conversation control is the method of asking questions and stay away from statements. And I call that conversation control. You can do better in any conversation if you just limit what you say to questions. Questions and answers, because all problems are solved. Every problem in the universe is solved through the process of questions and answers. So particularly in a volatile situation where people are kind of shouting at each other and all like that, if you just stop making statements, because I do that myself, I stop making statements, and then I just ask questions. And then it's something about a question. A question causes a person to think. You know, you just put a question out there. Rather than make a statement, ask a question. When you make statements, people sometimes will just start challenging your statement. If you're asking a question, people don't have a tendency to challenge your question because it's a question. And every question has an answer. So the person who is trying to answer the question has the burden. The person who is asking the question always has the advantage. That's the philosophy anyway. And I think it's very functional.
So okay.
You can control a conversation simply by saying, well, I'm not making any more statements. Because statements can be volatile. Statements bring about arguments. Like, particularly if you make a statement where you accuse somebody of something, oh, you'll get a hot argument then. But if you put that same, what you are going to say in a statement, you put it in the frame of reference of a question, then that means that the person who is going to answer the question has to do some thinking. Because in order to answer a question, you have to think. And so that's a much healthier environment. If people would just say, okay, well, since we got 10 or 12 people here in this discussion, and everybody's throwing brickbats at each other and all like that, let's just start asking some questions about the issues. Not about personalities, but about issues. And then you get what you might call compensatory conversation control. And the control in person will be the person who's asking the most questions. Because there's something about that question. If people keep trying to answer questions, the truth will come out.
Okay,
this
caller.
That's why court systems are set up that way.
Caller, yes, you said you had a second question.
Yes, it's a little long-winded, but I'm going to make it as short as possible.
Appreciate
that. A lot of black intellectuals in the so-called conscious community go above and beyond when it comes to historical and theological studies. Now, they tend to accumulate a wealth of knowledge amongst themselves, and with that same knowledge, they arm themselves and go to all these debates. And from my perspective, it's one debate after another, and I don't really see any end in sight. Now, what would Mr. Fuller recommend saying to some of these individuals to maybe redirect their energy?
Mr. Fuller?
Oh, well, I can say that they're just doing what they are doing, and I'm doing what I'm doing because, see, the code does not allow me to criticize somebody else's efforts. And there's a logical reason for this. No one has solved the race problem. The only experts on racism are the racists themselves. I want to repeat that. The only experts on white supremacy are the white supremacists. They are the only people that know exactly how they go about doing what they do and understand the process for which they do it and results that they look for, and they do get results. They are very precise. They are very scientific. They're the most scientific people, political scientists, that the world has ever seen. And they are the most successful. And there are no non-white people who are experts on racism because there's no non-white person that knows enough about it, including myself. So when you hear a black person say, well, I'm an expert on racism, no, you're not. Because if you were an expert and you were opposed to it, we wouldn't be having these conversations about it. It would have been eliminated. So the only experts on racism are the white supremacists. Black people, non-white people, should try to become experts. So therefore, I'm not qualified, really, to criticize anyone else's effort. All I can do is just listen to what that person is saying and evaluate it for what I can do with what they're saying. And that would include my material. I've written books, and I'm making talks now. I'm talking now. Everybody should evaluate what I'm saying and say, is there anything that I can get out of this that I can use? That's the question.
Okay.
And so that would apply to any black person, any non-white person out here talking about this subject. You listen to that person, and since there are no experts, you never know when there's a breakthrough going to come. So you listen to them, and when you walk away, you say, did I learn anything that I can use? And if I can use it for what, when, where? And how can I measure what I got or its value to me? And this is how everybody, but each individual has to make that choice. I'll listen to anybody and everybody, I don't care who it is, who's talking about the race issue. And I come away with my evaluation, not of the person, but of what I heard. And I ask myself, how can I use what I just heard? And if I can't use it, well, I came to the conclusion I can't use it. If I can use it, I use it. That's it. That's all there is.
Okay, Mr. Fuller. All right, then, caller, I appreciate that.
Question.
Okay, then, caller. Thank you. I have another caller who I'm going to bring to the line. Caller, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, I was listening when you were saying that non-white people are not experts in white supremacy. But what I've, just my personal observation experience is that to be, and I looked in your book and I didn't see the word, the definition of sellout. So I'm not sure if you recognize that as a term.
Well, Irv Jallo used that term when talking about Sharpton. Am I correct? Was it
yes.
Sharpton, or are you just talking about people who are placed in our midst and then all of a sudden they're moved up and then we're told that these are the people we have to follow? Is
right.
that right?
Yes.
That's what you would. Is
yes.
that?
That's yes, exactly. Me? That's exactly what I was saying. The people who, you know, are placed before us and then we're told are our so-called leaders. But are they really sellouts? Or have they really sold their soul to be in that position?
Okay, so that's the word that she used. I don't think Mr. Fuller used that word, but go ahead, caller.
Okay, so one thing from my personal observation, especially in the area that I'm in and looking at the behavior of the of non-white people in my area and how they respond to whites and how they are, in a sense, rewarded for their behavior, I come to the conclusion that non-whites can be even more expert at white supremacy than the typical white person. And I say that because in order to survive as someone who compromises their own self-interest, their own family community, they have to be absolutely aware of exactly what they can and cannot do in a system of white supremacy to promote it and to present themselves as a non-threat to their own community, such as Al Sharpton, and who I also think Louis Farrakhan, Jesse Jackson, Oprah Winfrey, Michael Jordan.
So you think many of these people are kind of promoted and put up front, and in fact, by doing that, they're also promoting the idea that white is right and white supremacy. Is that correct? Is that what I hear you saying?
Right. That's exactly why they are put in those positions by white, because they are experts at promoting white supremacy.
Wow, that's heavy. Irv, and then I'm going to have Mr. Fuller kind of round that out. Irv, he says they are... Wow, that's a deep statement. He says they're experts at promoting white supremacy, even more than black people. I mean, even more than white supremacists.
I would have to agree with the caller and say that, you know, the word has just slipped me. That is another part that I would say would be sellouts. You know what I mean? They promote it. Gatekeepers. That's where I was going with it. The gatekeepers. When another black person is trying to do something and you got that gatekeeper, that's what I call them, to prevent you from doing it. If you work for somebody,
does what? Keeps the gate? Keeps
the gate for the white supremacists. They won't let another black person in. If you're trying to do something or somebody owes you some money or something like that, they act like it's their money that you know, they have to pay you or whatever, when in actuality, you've done the work. You put in your time, but You got the black person who's the accountant who you like, can I get my money? They're called gatekeepers.
That's what the caller is saying. Caller, I think she's saying what you pretty much said. Am I correct?
Right.
Okay.
Exactly.
Let me have Mr. Fuller respond. Mr. Fuller.
Well, I have a different perspective on the entire matter. I say that the white supremacists are the white supremacists. I never look at any of their victims of white supremacy. I don't care about what name they go by, what title they go by. I listen to what they have to say. But after every black person, every non-white person says what they have to say about anything, I turn my chair around after they get through speaking and pick out whatever white person I happen to see. And I say, now that I've heard from them, I want to know what you have to say. And that's what I recommend that every non-white person on the planet always do.
Why, Mr. Fuller?
Because it's the white person who's going to make the decisions anyway. Non-white people don't make decisions about other non-white people. They're not in my way. Any of these people, they're not in my way. The white supremacists make the decision about all non-white people. Anytime you're talking to the white supremacists and they make a decision, now you're getting somewhere. Because they will, in 5 minutes, they'll take care of whatever it is that's got to be taken care of. Why? Because they have the hands-on, direct power. Now, other non-white people just got opinions about things, and they might have all kinds of ill intent. There are a lot of non-white people who don't like black people. All right. But you don't have to pay any attention to that if you don't want to. Or you can pay attention to it. I pay attention to it. I listen to everything that, you know, all of the black people who, some black people say, you know, are sellouts and traitors and whatnot. I listen to what they have to say. But after I listen, then I turn my chair toward whatever white person happens to be nearby.
But
and ask that white person, now, what do you have to say? Because that is going to be the bottom line.
Well, that's interesting. But, you know, when you have people, and blacks who are in the position to hire another black, because that's who you're going to interview with. That's the person that's before you. It's not a white person. And you know that your resume is on point, and you know that you are qualified, overqualified for the job. And the gatekeeper, as I call them, you don't get the job because simply because you're black, simply because you look like them. That's a problem. And I think that's what the other caller was saying, too. You know, when we have these people who are black, who are in positions to help out another black, a hand up, so to speak, and they won't give it to you. They skip right over you and give it to the white person. And that's continued white supremacy and being more of a white supremacist than the white person are, Mr. Fuller. What do you do with people like that?
Well, let me go to the caller. Hold on, Mr. Fuller. Let me go to the caller
first
and see if Irv said exactly what you were saying. Was that correct or incorrect, caller?
Yeah, I think I see it too.
Okay, Mr. Fuller.
That will always be, as long as you have the system of white supremacy. And what do you do about it? What's the correct, logical thing to do about it? You listen to the job that you've just been turned down for. You have this black person who's been put there. This happens all the time. That goes with the territory. We're in a prison camp. So in a prison camp, you have people who are appointed as trustees. We're all trustees. I mean, they can appoint anybody. Mm-hmm. So we don't get lost in that. This is very important. Otherwise, we wind up in what the code calls shadow boxing.
Mm-hmm.
You're boxing the shadow of the white supremacists. The white supremacists can make more shadows than you can ever box. You can't, you know, when you're shadow boxing, what are you doing? You're boxing at a shadow.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not hitting the person that's making the shadow. All right? If you understand the principles of shadow boxing, you are boxing a shadow. So going after other non-white people, mm-hmm. you'll be doing that forever. You'll wear yourself out doing that. If I'm appointed to be a gatekeeper, all the white supremacists will do is just put pressure on me and say, "You, the only job that you're going to have in order to eat in this prison camp
mm-hmm.
is to keep that gate, and you don't let anybody go through the gate that I don't authorize." So look at the key point here, that I don't authorize. So it means I got to talk to the person who is talking to the gatekeeper.
Mm.
See, this is what black people have to learn. You can't get anything done. I mean, arguing with a black person who's been assigned to come down to the gate and turn you away.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because when you hit that one and knock him down, and I mean, knock his teeth out, or even convert him, even get him to see your way and say, "I don't want you to be a gatekeeper. You shouldn't be a gatekeeper." And the person might say, "You know what? You're right. I'm not going to be a gatekeeper." So then he comes out the gate. He leaves the gate. He's not going to keep the gate. Well, the white supremacist, when he find out that nobody's down there at the gate, he just sends another one down there. You've got to get to the white supremacists. The Corleones understood that. Even in the mafia, they understand that. What did the Don Corleone say? "I never knew until the day it was Barzini all the time."
Yeah.
In other words, I mean, we're running around here, I mean, getting all these hired guns and all like that. We're not doing nothing. We was wearing ourselves out.
Right.
And drawing a whole lot of attention to ourselves. We got to get to the guy who is sending these people. We got to get to him. And then all of it will stop.
Hold on for a
minute.
That's it. Mr. Fuller, we got another caller, and I want to get him in before we have to close. Go ahead, caller, the one that just came on the line, hadn't had a chance to speak.
Yeah, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
No, I just wanted to say that I guess I would be considered one that would be called a gatekeeper. And I wanted to give an example of why and why that I say that cannot be true in a system of racism.
So wait a minute. You would be called a gatekeeper. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I would suppose.
Why?
Make it good.
Oh, okay. Because in a situation where I had the was told that I had the opportunity to assist in hiring a particular person.
Mm-hmm.
Here, we're going to interview these people, and you're going to help me. And I'm going to help the white male who was the manager. I was the assistant manager.
Mm-hmm.
Given the opportunity to interview different individuals for a particular position. After going through the interviews, him asking me my opinion of the people that we should hire, I said, let's hire the black male because he obviously had the credentials, et cetera.
Uh-huh.
When it came to making the decision, my decision was trumped by the white male saying, no, we're going to hire who I say we hire.
Mm.
So to all of the outsiders, it looked like, oh, yeah, you just kept him from getting the job. But in reality, and I think it doesn't get discussed enough, or maybe the point gets missed, is that a black person being in a position that seems to be a position of power really isn't. And I didn't understand that because I had never heard of Mr. Fuller at the time.
Wow.
But having read him, having listened to this show and others, it makes total sense now that there are no such thing as black gatekeepers. These are individuals, myself and some people that are probably even listening, that can attest to the fact that when you are in these positions, you are powerless.
Mm. So what I have been saying about, you know, elected officials and these seats and things like that, and like you said, even yourself being appointed to a position, there really is no power. Like Mr. Fuller said, you can't feed, can't clothe, can't even employ folks who look like you. It's sad.
Well, I think what we're going to do, I think, Mr. Fuller, I think we've opened up something here. I'd like for us to do part two next week because I think this is really a big, big issue. And it's growing because there is those faces up front, Mr. Fuller, that you've talked about,
mm-hmm.
how faces are put up front. It's almost scientific as to how they are worked, and then they come out of nowhere seemingly, but they've been being pushed up all the time. That unseen hand is in back, and then the next thing you know, they're up front. Mr. Fuller, you've talked about these faces, black faces up front before many times. Am I correct?
Yes, and I could be a black face up front. I like to make the prison camp analogy. We are all in prison. The entire world is a prison for the non-white people on this planet in the system of white supremacy. And the system of white supremacy is the prison, and the entire planet is a prison. So if you are an inmate of the prison, and if you are classified as non-white, black, brown, red, yellow, any of the people who have color in their skin are prisoners in that system. So what the commandants of the prison, the white supremacists, do is just come down the line and say, you will make bed check tonight, and you will make sure that everybody in your barracks or everybody in your cell block is in bed at 9 o'clock. If you don't make sure of this, you don't eat tomorrow. And so that's a heavy thing. I mean, you know, and anybody who runs prisons, particularly prisoners of war and all like that, they understand this. Anybody who's ever been in a death camp understands this. They had what they called the Sonderkommando in World War II. That is, when the Nazis had the Jews in the death camps, they would pick out certain Jews and say, put on this uniform. And the Jewish person would say, I don't want to put on this uniform. I mean, this is a Nazi-type uniform. And, you know, I don't want to do that. I mean, I'm a prisoner, too. I mean, what are you trying to pull here and all like that? Say, well, I'll tell you what. You'll either put on this uniform and you will herd these other, your relatives and all like that, to the dinner table. I mean, when it comes time to eat or whatever I tell them to do or when it's time for them to work, you will see to it that they're at their workstations. Now, if you don't want to do it, you go into the oven tomorrow. But now you will get a few weeks before you go into the oven. Make up your mind. You got 3 seconds. Now, when they put it to you like that, sometimes, you know, you say, okay, well, if they don't get me, they'll get somebody else, so I might as well go. We're all prisoners.
Mm. Wow. Thank you, Mr. Fuller, and thank you, callers. And this is kind of like part one of what it is that we're going to be dealing with. We're going to try to get more into this next week also. Mr. Fuller, thank you, and we'll be talking to you real soon. We appreciate you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.